Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to Nature Spirituality with Selena Fox. We are celebrating harvest time of the autumn. And we are going to have the opportunity to take a look at some ways to do some harvesting and preserving of herbs. I started working with herbs as a young girl, and it has been one of my pleasures in my life to connect with herbs, to have them growing in my garden, to have them growing in the wild spaces, and to do wild crafting. And tonight I'm going to share some of my best practices for harvesting and preserving herbs. I give thanks to everyone who is listening live on Circle Sanctuary's Internet Radio Network, CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, and everybody tuning in live on my main Facebook page, Selena Fox Updates. And I give thanks to all of you who tune in later. Let's begin with our exploration of harvesting and preserving herbs by calling to the divine, each of us in our own way, and specifically calling to the divine in its green forms, whether you call it the green goddess and the green god, the green spirit. One of the important things that I've found in doing herbal harvesting and preserving of the herbs is to have ritual and to have connection with the plants that I'm working with. Not just the physiological part of the plants, but the spiritual essence. Divine is one, divine is many. Great Mother, Great Father, Great Spirit. We call to you and honor you. We call to the sacred elements, the earth that has the roots and the nutrients that grow herbs, the air, the breezes that aid in pollination and growth, the fire of the sacred sun that blesses and helps the herbs to grow. The powers of sacred water, water in the form of humidity in the air, nurturing rains into the soil, the dew, all the forms of nurturing water that help the herbs grow. And we call to spirit, the interconnecting source that not only links humankind with various plants, but with the entire biosphere and the greater circle of nature of which we are all part. We call to the spirits of the herbs in a general way and in specific ways. We call to the green ones, the green spirits. Guide us, aid us in exploring, harvesting herbs, preserving them, and doing best practices to help sustain herb life. We call to the ancient ones. We call to the spirits of our ancestors that knew the ways of the green world. Come, watch over us and our work together in learning and in sharing. Sacred ones, we call to you, we honor you. Be in us, be with us now and in the times to come as we harvest and preserve herbs. So be it. Well, herbs take a lot of different forms, and I'm going to share some of the basics as well as some of my own personal experiences of what has worked well for me over the years. I think if you're going to be doing a harvest of some herbs, even before you begin the actual harvesting activities, take some time, make some time to sit, to contemplate. Contemplate your connection with the sacred by whatever name or names, form or forms you work with the sacred in your own spiritual tradition. Call to mind the herbs that you are seeking to do harvest work, be that harvest work in your gardens, in fields, or in the wilds. Connect with the spiritual dimensions of the herbs that you plan to harvest, and also connect with the spiritual dimensions of the place, of the land where you will be. Then, as you do this basic foundational work for harvesting as a whole, then start contemplating and selecting a particular day and time when you will be doing your harvest activities. Now, I found it really helpful as part of this process to take a look at weather reports, as well as getting your own intuitive sense of what would be a good day that fits within your schedule, but also optimizes the quality of the volatile oils and other aspects of the herbs that help with the work that you do with the herbs. Yes, there are better times to harvest some herbs than others, and part of that depends on the type of herb. Part of it has to do whether it's an annual plant. That means its life cycle is 1 year. An example of an annual, at least in these parts, and I'm in north central USA, in an area known as the Driftless area in southwestern Wisconsin. Well, our winters, they've warmed up over the last 40 years. However, they still can get quite cold. So basil, that might self-seed itself in some environments, we grow as an annual, as with some other plants such as lavender. So if it's an annual, it's going to be 1 year life cycle. If it's a biennial, it has a 2 year life cycle. Mullein and parsley are examples of biennials. And you'll gather something the first year, and then you'll gather other things the second year. With mullein, it's the leaves in the first year, and it's the stalks and the flowers, and some leaves in the second year as well. But the leaves are going to be fuller and more vibrant if you get them the first year of a biennial, working with mullein in particular. Now, most of the herbs I have in my garden are perennial, which means, weather permitting, that they are going to come year after year. And I have an example. It's a kind of mint. It's called anise hyssop. This is a very hardy plant and a very resourceful plant, and it spreads its seeds all over the place. So if you have any of this growing in your garden, be prepared that it's going to not only pop up where it's planted, but in many places in your environment. Perennial herbs, you want to be able to harvest from them, but because they come back year after year, it's especially important when you do your harvest with a perennial herb that you leave sufficient plant available. You don't just cut the whole thing down as you would with an annual or the second year of a biennial. You want it to be replenished. So you will take, in some traditions, some say take a third of the plant, some say take a quarter of the plant, and some say take a fifth of the plant. I actually, with my perennials, will take several cuttings during the growing season to stimulate the growth and to also have it be sustainable in times to come. So as you think about what day and time you're going to be doing harvesting, you need to keep in mind the life cycle of the particular herbs you're going to be harvesting. You also need to be thinking about what are the particular plant parts of the herbs that you'll be harvesting. Now, with Anacetha, one of the things I like is to let it actually go to flower. A beautiful purple flowers, good in arrangements, and also a flower that keeps its color when it's dried. And I will grow some of the Anacetha in the garden specifically for the ornamental dimension, but you certainly can use the other parts of the plant as well. So if it's going to be a flowering plant, you want to get, and you're after the flowers, you want to get the flowers just as they're hitting peak bloom or starting in that direction. You will have a lot of the energy of the plant and the oils of the plant concentrated in the flowers. But if what you're going for are the leaves, then, and in the case of basil, you'll want to pinch those flowers off as they form to stimulate more leaf production. And you'll want to pick the leaves before it flowers and actually prevent it from flowering unless you really like the flowers as part of seasoning. I let some of my basil actually flower. Now, if you're going for seeds, such as with angelica, you really need to let the seeds fully form. And one of my best approaches in harvesting angelica seeds is to not only wait till the seeds have fully formed, but they've actually cured, they've turned brown, they're ready to drop off into the ground and start some more angelica plants. So I'll clip the seed heads and put them in paper bags. Why paper bags? First of all, it's breathable and it catches all of those seeds. And so that's another thing to keep in mind. Are you using the stem? Are you using the seeds? Are you using the flowers? Are you using the leaves? Or are you using the roots? Comfrey root is best dug in the spring and in the autumn, when the energy of the plant is concentrated in the roots. And that goes pretty much for most of the herbs with roots that you want to harvest. How much of the root you take really depends on how old the plant is and what you're using the root for. So what is the plant part or parts you want to harvest? That can impact your day and time. In a general way, the best time to do an herbal harvest for the above ground parts is in the morning, on a dry day, after the dew has evaporated from the leaves. Before you get into midday heat, you'll get much more volatile oils, when you are harvesting in late morning. The humidity factor, the dew point, those are indicators how dry is it outside. And it really depends on a number of factors. Part of it depends on geographical area. Some areas are just naturally drier than others. Where I live in Wisconsin, it can get quite humid in the summer, but not all the days are equally humid. And on those days that are sunny and fairly dry or very dry, those are really good days to harvest herbs that you're going to be drying and preserving for later use. If you're going to be working with an herb fresh, well, you can harvest it anytime, but it's better to harvest in the morning as the energy of the plant moves up with the sun. It doesn't have to be a bright sunny day. It can be a cloudy day. But if it's a rainy day, better not to harvest a plant. Let it take in the water and wait until the plant has dried off, especially if you want to use that plant in a dried form. You want to preserve it. Or if you want to freeze the plant for later use, and I'll be talking more about that in a bit. So what day and time, what herbs are you going to harvest? I think it's a good idea to have some kind of a journal or notebook, or maybe you have a daily planner where you just note down what you've harvested when, and that helps you get a good understanding over time of what's working with that. And then it's important to get all your equipment together. My favorite harvesting tool is clippers. And I like a clippers that are very sharp and also have an easy way to keep the clippers shut when I'm not using them. Some people like to use a sickle. Some people use scissors. If you're going to use scissors, they should be hardy scissors, and you should have a means for sharpening your scissors. Now, I use scissors in the processing of herbs, and this is my herbal scissors that I use when I have harvested fresh herbs, and then I'm going to be putting them in a salad, or I'm going to be using the herbs in some dish, or I'm going to preserve them in some way. And I only use these scissors for herbs. I don't cut paper with it or anything else. And I do what I can to wipe off, usually with paper towel, the blades. These are stainless steel blades, but you can tell they're already getting some coloration from the oils from all the herbs that I've been cutting with that. Something else that is a good idea to have available are containers where you're going to be putting their herbs. Now, I know some people will use plastic bags to gather herbs. I'm not a big fan of plastic for collecting herbs and storing herbs. I really prefer to use baskets. I have baskets of many shapes and sizes, and in fact, I have a porch on my house where the inside of the roof has lots of hooks, and I have all sorts of baskets hanging. I not only have that as a way I can collect my baskets and put them where I know I can find the right size and that type of thing, but once I have harvested herbs in a basket, then what I do is I will put something inside the basket. This is Mother of Time. And then that will identify the herbs, and then I'll hang them up. And then they will dry. up getting some breezes. So I used the baskets not only to collect the herbs during the drying process, but to actually dry the herbs. And baskets are formed in different ways, but air can come through, and they're out of natural materials. So getting the various things together and creating spaces for you to work. I think it's a really good idea, even before you do the harvesting, is to get an area where you're going to be processing the herbs, and that means taking a look at the plants. And for example, this one has a leaf that has some brown and yellow in it. I'm not going to put that in. I'm not going to keep that. I'm going to let it go into the compost pile, or I will sometimes take the second leaves, the leaves that aren't quite perfect in good shape, and I'll put them in a container, dry them, and then use them for ritual fires. So after you've done some harvesting, you also need to do some processing and to have a place where you can discard what's not needed, another place out of the sun where the herbs are being held until they get to their place of drying. Most of the herbs that I preserve, I do by drying, but I also have some herbs that I preserve by freezing. So you want to create a space for processing the harvested materials, some space for the cast-offs, the discarded stuff. You need a space for the herbs to dry, and it's really good to have some air circulation. You don't want the herbs in direct sunlight, and you don't want it in a humid area. So ideally, it doesn't have to be, you know, a huge room or whatever, getting a few shelves together, or to create shelves yourself, or a bookcase, for example. There might be some room to put some herbs on part of a bookcase. Something might do double duty. And in addition to having a place for the stuff to dry, it's also important you have a place where you store the herbs. Now, there's a lot of different opinions about what the best place is to store herbs. And for many years, I had shelves in my kitchen. They weren't in a cupboard, but they weren't in direct light, and that was where I stored my herbs. More than 20 years ago, when I had got my own place, and I have my own land next to Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, where I lived for many years. So in my own home, as part of the home design, I made sure there were herb cabinets. So not only do I have the shelves, but a means to shut the shelves off from light, visible light. So you really don't want your herbs getting exposed to sunlight or a lot of light, or you don't want them in a very humid condition. You want them to stay dry and be dry. And so as you do all this preliminary piece, you basically are getting prepared to do your harvest. It's also important as part of your preparations to have a good labeling system. So my system, it takes a couple steps. I have putting the name of the herb on a little piece of file card, and I prefer file cards because they're a bit stiffer rather than typing paper, but if you have scrap paper around, you can certainly use that. But I'll put the name of the herb, even if I think I'll remember it. I have so many herbs I harvest, this is a way to positively ID. And if I'm going to be taking several harvest during the course of the season, I'll also put the date that I've done the harvesting on that little card in the basket. But ultimately, the labeling system is having the jar where you're storing the dried herb, making sure you have it on the jar. And my technique for that is to get a file card, cut it up in some small strips, use a magic marker, putting the name of the herb, using scotch tape, and putting it on the glass jar. And why I prefer glass jars, first of all, recycling is something I've been doing since I was very young. And it, although there aren't that many, there aren't as many glass jars available in supermarkets. A lot of people have gone to plastic, but if you have things such as spaghetti sauce or whatever that you like to get from the local grocery store, save those jars. This is a mayonnaise jar, and I really appreciate it because it has a tight-fitting lid. It screws on, and it's a very solid glass jar, and occasionally things, accidents do happen, jars fall off the table or whatever. If you have a solid enough glass jar, it may actually hold up even to an occasional fall. If you don't have a good source of recycled glass jars, canning jars, which are in abundance in many stores and grocery places, hardware stores at this time of year in the autumn, is another good way you can get some glass jars. Why glass jars? Traditional, yes, but the glass doesn't interact with the herb. And why a tight-fitting metal lid? You don't want extra air getting in. You want to keep the herb as fresh as it is after it's been dried. So those are preliminary things. Now you're coming into the harvest time. So you're going out to go. I do one herb at a time. So I'll go to my garden. I'll honor the whole garden and all the plants. And then I will go to the particular herb that I'm going to be working with. And I honored and connected with basil as I harvested some for tonight's juice, and very fragrant basil. And you'll notice that it's very compact. Part of that has come from the fact that during the course of the summer, as I have used basil, I've used it fresh, I've communed with the plant, and then I've gone and I have picked the leaves off, and that has, that pinching of the leaves off has stimulated growth. So I have lots of basil leaves popping up all over the place. So I've harvested the basil. I've honored the plant, and I've taken what I've sensed I needed from the plant. With basil, it is very sensitive to cold weather. We've already had temperatures going down into the 40s Fahrenheit, but we're having a bit of summertime returning to the fall this week. It's going to get cooler again. So I know in my garden that if we're starting to get down into the freezing zone, 32 degrees Fahrenheit, then it's really important to make sure I get all my basil harvested before it gets to 32. And in fact, I tried to harvest it before it even gets to 35. There are different microenvironments that you'll find. Some parts of your garden might be at a higher elevation than others, might get more sun. So you'll know over time, you're doing gardening at your home, that some areas actually will fare better if you're in a place that has hard freezes, and we really are in a place with hard freezing. If it looks like there's going to be an anomaly and a freeze one night and then the predictions are it's going to get warmer, then you may want to take a dish towel or a bathroom towel or some kind of cloth and gently drape it over not only basil but other plants that might be considered tender perennials. And some of our lemon balm will start showing signs of the colder temperatures. It's perennial, but it can get dipped by cold temperatures. So you may want to cover some of your plants if you aren't done harvesting. Once you've done your harvest, give thanks to that plant, take the plant and whatever you've harvested, and then put it out of the sun, off to the side, go to your next plant. Now, some people like to pick some plants. I have some mint here, and actually not dry it right away, but put it in a vase. And you can actually have it decorate your home, give it a few more days, or it can even go a week or so, because mint will actually root itself. Sip it. You can have some fresh mint right in your kitchen or your house that way. Use it ornamentally, but you can also use it for beverages and ceremonial purposes. And then once you are done with that, then you can actually take it out and then proceed with the processing as you would with something that you harvested specifically for drying. What are some other ways to do some preservation? I like to take the dried, take the plants and let them dry in baskets. I'm hanging them up. But you can get newspapers or paper toweling. You can get the tops of big cardboard boxes. Anything that's flat that you can lay the herbs out on, that can be a wonderful way to help preserve. Some plants you may want to actually put them in their final form. This is a mugwort mudge stick, Artemisia vulgaris, and I use this in ritual. And you'll notice there's stems and there's herbs in there. And I either use some kind of cotton string like this, or I've actually used dental floss as a way of binding it together. You don't want it too tight. You want it to dry. And then you kindle at the end, and that basically it's a very big touch for mugwort. But you can use it for white sage and other types of sages and rosemary and cedar. So you may actually, once you've harvested one of those types of plants, actually create a smudge stick and then let the whole thing dry and then use once dried. Some people like to make tinctures, and that's a whole other workshop, but I mention it because it's the use of alcohol to preserve herbs, the alcohol taking the volatile oils and other ingredients and preserving it that way. There are some types of tinctures that don't use alcohol for people that are in recovery and really can't take alcohol in at all. Some people use olive oil as a way of preserving some herbs. But most of the herbs that I do preservation with are dried herbs. And I'll put them in jars and continue to work with them long after they've been growing and harvesting. I'd like to share with you now a technique that I started working with a number of years ago. Now, this involves an ice tray. It can be a stainless steel. This is one of my uses of plastic. And I'm going to share with you a way to preserve basil. Yes, you can dry the basil. That will work. You can hang up the, and put this on a nail and hang it that way, or if you're going to bunch several together, take a rubber band and a twist tie and make a little hook that way. But another way that you can preserve basil is by putting it in an ice cube. So what I'm going to do now is I have one of my bowls for processing herbs, and I'm going to pull off all of the leaves. And as I do, I'm taking a close look. You don't see any diseased or yellowed leaves, and you really, for preserving, you want best quality herbs, especially if you're going to be doing something with this. And those of you who enjoy cooking and like to work with basil, fresh basil in your cooking, yes, you can. It's an annual plant. You can have it growing inside on your windowsill. I live in a forest, so we don't get a lot of light. Get light through our windows, but not really a lot to have an herb garden in a window. So what I'm doing now is shooting with this plant and pulling off all these leaves. You'll see a whole bowl of leaves. And then I take my herbal scissors and I start cutting the leaves up. Now, this may seem pretty labor intensive, but something you can do when you listen to a podcast or watch a live stream, whether it's on TV or a mobile device. And what you want to do is, for this technique, is to actually cut the herbs up in thin strips. And ideally, you will have space in your freezer for your ice tray, because you're going to be being able to put the herb in the ice cube tray. And I'm going to go pretty quick here. Usually, I spend a bit more time doing this. And I actually enjoy doing some herbal processing because you smell the herbs. It's a wonderful way to strengthen your connection and you're communing with the spirit of the plant, and also you are taking it in its freshest form. So if you have harvested from the garden, as I did right before this podcast, then you're going to want to process your basil even before it starts wilting in the least little bit. All right, now I've done a bunch of this, and now I have a spray, and what I'll be doing is taking some of these now shredded, cut up basil leaves, and I will put them as tight as I can in here. And eventually this whole thing will be filled up. Once it's filled up, then I'll take some water and fill in each of these layers with that and put it in the freezer. And after a few hours, it will be set, and you'll have ice cubes with basil in it. So as you're cooking, then what do you have? You have your basil, fresh basil, that you can put into your sauces or your soup. It's really a wonderful thing. It takes a little bit of time, but it's really a fabulous way to have fresh basil, especially in parts like Wisconsin where winter lingers longer. And now what I'd like to do to empty basil out of this is to share with you a way to do some drying of anise hyssop. Now, you can just dry it on the stem this way. And if you have lots of room, you know, that could work really good. But what I tend to do is I will save the, and let's get this kit for the flowers that I'm going to actually use in these. I just pull them like this, and then they all come off. And that's one of the great things about working with herbs, that you strip the leaves off, and then you come up with a bunch of stems. Okay, what are you going to do with those stems? Well, I love bonfires, and I have a hearth fire in my home. During the colder months, I will do all sorts of fires there, and I will break up the twigs, and I'll put them in a basket, and even small twigs like this, I will add to that. So what you accomplish is, first of all, you've got the herbs here that take up less space for drying, and I would transfer this over into one of my basket areas, flat basket or a hanging basket. And then once I am done with getting all of the leaves and the flowers off, and then if you want the stems, you can certainly put them all to dry together, but I like the stems for sacred fires. So now I'm going to take some already dried herbs, and this is mint. And I harvested 6 cents just a couple weeks ago. And some of them have stems and some do not. So I'm going to take them out, some of them out here. And now these have already been dried, and most of the stems have been removed, but not all of them. Now you can just break them up and take them this way and put them in the jar, or you may want to take them and strip them off, and then once again you get some twigs, very dry twigs. And so one of the things that I will do is work with dried earth as I'm having a conversation with someone, or I am listening to music, or watching my program, either online or on television, and it's a way to connect with the earth as well as getting them in a good place. Now, some people prefer to keep the herbs in a, once they've been stripped from all the leaves, in a non-crushed way. Other people want to crush them up smaller. What I prefer to do if I have the shelf space is to get the leaves off either before or, in this case, after the smaller twigs have dried, and then not to crush them up right away, to actually let them go into the jar, and when I'm starting to use them, then to crush them, because then they actually, their scent and their volatile oils much stronger. So what are some additional things to keep in mind for harvesting and preserving herbs? Recognize that an intuitive component of the herb work is a good thing to develop. Intuitive in terms of the process with the herb energy itself. Intuitive, building rapport and alignment with the particular herbs that you're connecting with. All the herbs that I've brought here tonight are ones that I have had long associations with, and I really find that as I work with them, it deepens my understanding. Sometimes, as I am working with an herb, I will have things come to me, some ideas about ways of using it in a ceremony. I might have some inspiration come. It's good to have an herb journal or some way that you can note down some of this. If you have some type of spiritual journal, you can just include it there. If you don't, I'd consider doing that, or to have your own particular notebook specifically for the herbs that you're working with. It really helps your memory be enhanced, and it strengthens your connection with the plant. And sometimes the spirit of a plant will be speaking to you intuitively how much to use, where to cut when you're harvesting, and some ideas, some lore connected with it. If you do get some messages about a use and you aren't familiar with that, do some research on it and get a sense of what tradition that might be from. So those are some other things to keep in mind as you are working with harvesting and preserving herbs. One way to preserve herbs is to make a preparation right after you have harvested that. And so I'm going to share with you one of my favorite ways to do that, and that is making herbal tea or a potion, depending on what you're using it for. I like enamelware cauldrons. One of my go-to favorite cauldrons. I have some really big ones, too, that I've used for ceremonial purposes with hundreds of people. But for daily use, I have this small enamelware cauldron, and I like having a lid for it for a number of reasons. So in making a tea, you can make the tea fresh. What you want to do is bring the water to a boil, and then you're going to put in the herbs. Some will put the stems in, some will not. Then you will stir it around, and I love wooden spoons. Yes, they're metal, stainless steel ones. Some people have some plastic ones, but there's just something very magical about using a wooden spoon. I consider it a kind of wand. So stirring the herb in and then letting it steep, and this is called an infusion, which means that you don't boil the herb. Bring the water to a boil, then you put the herb in, and then you and so putting the lid on top of your cauldron. How long do you let it steep? 13 minutes. That's a magical number. Part of it depends on how strong you want to make it, and part of it depends on the herb. If it's lemon balm, you can let it steep for a really long time, and it won't get bitter. Some of the other mints, though, if you let them steep long, other things, the taste isn't as sweet and as good. So I usually, somewhere between 10 and 20 minutes, 13 minutes are my go-to time. Okay, so you have brought it to a boil, put the herbs in, stirred, but every so often you're going to want to stir it some more and put the lid back on. Once you're done with the preparation, and what you want to do is drain it off, and that's when a funnel and a strainer is good. I recommend getting at least one good quality stainless steel strainer, and I use them for processing herbs. I actually powder herbs in them, but when I'm not using them that way, I'll use to strain all of the leaves and stems, flowers, whatever, out with that. And then I'll put them in a glass jar and set it in the refrigerator, or if I'm going to be drinking it right away, I will then put it into a mug. And I do think if you're going to be preserving the herbs and actually using them in the form of a tea, that not only with the harvesting process you're connecting with the spirit of the plant, but as you make the tea, inviting it to share its healing and properties of wellness with you as you are using that. Or it might be something you're taking like a lemon balm tea to kind of enhance your sense of well-being. Or it might be something like catnip or chamomile to help take off the edge of the day and bringing about sleep. Does catnip for cats tends to get the cats a bit euphoric and exuberant up to a point, and then they bonk out. With humans, it tends to just have humans mellow out, and which is why a number of people make catnip tea as they prepare to go to sleep, warm tea, something that is very gentle. As with other uses of herbs, all uses of herbs, everybody's biochemical system has its own peculiarities. So if you're going to be taking herbs internally, it's a good idea to connect with your healthcare practitioner about that, and when you get your annual physical, to let your healthcare practitioner know what you're taking into your body on a regular basis. Some medications, chemical medications, do interact with some herbs, so it's really important that if you have herbs that you're taking as part of nutrition, as part of ceremonial beverages, things that it works in a good way with you rather than at cross purposes due to interactions with any medications or conditions that might be. So what are some other things to keep in mind? When you're out harvesting, especially with wildcrafting, you see a plant, honor the plant, but it's the only plant around. Even if it's perennial, I would not harvest from the plant. Maybe a few little, if you're using it as part of a charm, a few leaves or whatever, but if it's the only one of its kind there, then it's better to leave it so it will reproduce and have a greater chance of continuing in the wild. Once you are done harvesting, give thanks. And when you're working with the plant, whether it's as part of a ceremonial herb, you're using it in an incense blend, you're using it to asperge. That is purging. That is, I'll take one of these sprigs of mint. To asperge is to actually less place with water. So you can actually serve that way too. So whether you're using an incense or asperging or throwing the herb around the place, it's another way to let the beauty of the herb less taste space. And of course, dried herbs going into the sacred fire really can add some wonderful fragrance and delight to that. So give thanks to the herbs, honor the herbs, using them ceremonially when you're using them physically, using them for food and in other ways. By giving thanks, it's strengthens our connection with the plant, and it encourages ourselves to be aware of our interdependence within that greater web of life of which we're part, and it's a way of sending well wishes to the plant to help the plant, all the types of plants as species, to survive. I think it's important to keep your herbs separate when you're harvesting, and separate baskets, or if you're short on baskets, get some paper bags. Some grocery stores actually have paper bags still. Our local grocery gives you a choice of paper or plastic. We always do the paper bags because we reuse them in a lot of ways, not only for some harvesting activities, but Circle Sanctuary does a food drive around Yuletide, and it's a way of being able to take the foodstuffs into the local food pantry. And it kind of avoids all the plastic stuff that is all too abundant, unfortunately, in our atmosphere and our planet. So certainly, you know, I have a plastic funnel here, and I've used plastic bowls as part of processing things. So I'm not totally against plastic, but I think we really ought to be more aware of its use and to stop the single-use plastic stuff and really go more sustainable containers for being able to store things. So we've talked about some preservation options. We've talked about kind of my go-to standard, putting the dried herbs in a jar that's labeled. What I tend to do is put the name of the plant on the front, and also on the top, and on the top put when a harvest happened, at least a year. We've talked about the vase approach, actually harvesting and taking it indoors and having it stay alive in a way, and using the leaves for that. We've talked about refrigeration. Some of the fresh herbs, such as thyme that I gather, I will actually clip up and put a little glass jars in the refrigerator, and the thyme is ready to go, fresh thyme. I don't have to go out in the garden and try to gather it all up. It's already prepared. And fresh herbs in a refrigerator several days. When I work with chives, and I only use them fresh, but when I harvest them fresh to use, such as in eggs, salads, or in pizza, whatever, I always try to harvest some additional and then put them in a little glass jar in the refrigerator so I can have them available in a few days when I might be needing them again. We've talked about the freezer option, and another way of freezing, and this is in the berry department, and I just love black raspberries, black caps, blackberries, all sorts of berries. Cookie sheets, metal cookie sheets, I'll put them in my chest freezer, take the fresh berries and make a single layer. Then it basically freezes the berries, and then I put them in little Ziploc bags that I have labeled. Then I'm able to have berries, which I often will take those frozen berries and put them in herbal to add some delight. And so that's another way of working with freezing, in addition to a method for basil, fresh basil. And then, of course, we talked about tinctures and smudge sticks. There's actually a wide range of herbal products that you can craft once you've done some harvest. One of the things that is important if you're doing herb gardening and you're wanting to be aware of what is what in the garden and you are fairly new at herb gardening, it's a good idea to label the plant. I have lots of different types of plants, so I label the different types of events, same with time. And while I often will mix the mints together in a tea and wonderful blends, sometimes I want to use them separately. So it can help yourself remember the plant, and also when it comes to harvest time, then you know the name of the plant to label it with. I do think that having herb work as part of your spiritual practice, not only is something that's old school, it's been around for generations, but it's a way of us developing spiritual relationships with other living besides humans, and herbs are great teachers and allies, and as we continue our work with herbs, it is a fabulous way to enrich our own circle of support and to be a source of support for the green ones that make up our world and sustain human life. We give thanks to the divine as one. We give thanks to the divine as one. We give thanks to the divine as great mother, great father, great spirit. We give thanks to the soil, the sacred earth that gives nutrients to the herbs. We give thanks to the breezes for pollination and refreshing winds. We give thanks to the sacred fire of the sun that sustains life. We give thanks to water in its various forms for nurturing the herbs. We give thanks to the spirit that connects us all together. We give thanks to the land where the garden and fields and wild places are, where we do our herb harvest. We give thanks to the spirits of the herbs, to the green ones, to the ancient ones, to the ancestors. We give thanks. We give thanks. We give thanks. And I give thanks to all of you who have joined live and who will be watching and listening later. And I give thanks to our CSNP team, David and Jeanette Ewing, Circle Sanctuary Ministers from Northern Virginia that manage our radio network and do engineering for my podcast, and to Laura Gonzalez and Jeff Rose, also Circle Sanctuary, to our social media team and our folks working on the web and Circle Sanctuary Administration. For more information about Circle Sanctuary, find us on the web, circlesanctuary.org, and you can connect with me on the Sabrina Fox YouTube channel, at my main Facebook page. I've been live streaming this to Sabrina Fox updates. I'm on Twitter, Fox, and Instagram. So happy harvest. Thank you all for joining in, and bless during this harvest season, and may you grow in understanding and wisdom. So,
there were three men came out of the west, their fortunes for to try. And these three men made a solemn vow, John Barleycorn must die. They plowed, they sowed, they harrowed him in, throwing clods upon his head. And these three men made a solemn vow, John Barleycorn was dead. They let him lie for a very long time, till the rain from heaven did fall. little Sir John threw up his head and so amazed them all. They let him stand till the midsummer day, till he grew both pale and wan. Then little Sir John grew a great long beard and so became a man. They hired men with scythes so sharp to cut him off at the knee. They rolled him and tied him around the waist, serving him most barbarously. They hired men with sharp pitchforks to prick him to the heart, but the drover served him worse than that, for he bound him to a cart. They drove him around and around the field till they came upon a barn. And these three men made a solemn oath of poor John Barleycorn. They hired men with crab tree sticks to strip him skin from bone, but the miller, he served ground him between two
on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.